We are January 7th, 2010. Let me say that twice. 2010, as we head into this new year. And tonight's main science topic, I will be dealing with some very interesting topics that go through international borders, on my Science Hour. And I guess I will start with a statement made by our questionable president. His name is Obama. Yesterday he made a speech which was aired worldwide, and this speech, I was amazed at the amount of international coverage the speech received. And one of the first words out of his mouth, this speech was relative to the Christmas Day alleged almost bombing of a Northwest Airlines flight from Amsterdam to the United States. And of course, we've all heard about that. That has been prominent in the news. But one of the first words out of the president's, or the alleged president's name, out of the president's mouth, was science. Science and technology. And the way he used science and technology, he said that due to this alleged almost bombing of an American airline from a foreign country, that we had to use the best science and technology available and to, of course, protect you, the American people. Where have we heard that? One of his predecessors, George Bush Jr., used those terms all the time, that his solemn obligation was to protect the American people. And, of course, the protection racket is very old. It's been used throughout history many times to protect you, to give you protection to at the greatest of prices, including your freedom. But anyway, I'm going to start the new year. And by the way, I'm sorry I missed last week's show. And when you hear what I have to talk about this week, you will find that I was busy off on an assignment. I give myself these assignments. And as I said, crossing through international borders to find out really what was going on with a very bizarre case that is being totally misreported in the American press. Gee, what else is new? So at any rate, as we start January 7, 2010, first of all, I want to talk about the weather situation, the deep freeze that the world is in right now, the Northern Hemisphere. And the most unusual situation is that if we're cold, if we're having tremendous cold weather in the Northern Hemisphere, in the Western Hemisphere, in, say, Canada, the United States, then Europe and Russia and the other parts of the world, China, are usually very temperate. And if they're very cold, if they're in the deep freeze, then we're enjoying relatively cool, relatively temperate weather. So if there's a balance worldwide, and that's because of the way the jet streams carry around the world. They somewhat snake up to the poles, and then they drop down, and then they go back up to the pole, and they drop back down. Much of our weather being developed out in the Pacific Ocean, the jet stream carrying up to the North Pole, and then, especially in the wintertime, bringing down that cold Arctic air into the United States and Canada. And if it's nice and cold here, it's generally, as I said, relatively temperate in other parts of the globe in the Northern Hemisphere during the winter time, during the months of around October through March, let's say. But this time, this deep freeze goes worldwide. Not only is it worldwide, it goes very far south. We are seeing freezing temperatures in Florida. And, of course, when Florida, this is not unusual. Florida has seen this before. But Florida is getting days and days and successive days of this freezing weather, threatening the orange crop and the orange trees down there. India having fog across the country. Tremendous cold and snow in Seoul, Korea. I saw, and now understand that I've been out of the country for a couple of weeks now, and I don't pre-announce my trips for a very good reason, but so I got a good taste of international news. There was a train that left Beijing, China, and it headed out into the countryside, and a couple of days later hit into a snowbank where there were 2 meters of snow. the announcements that are coming from all parts of the globe internationally are that the statements that are being made, this cold snap is the coldest on record, whether you're in England, whether you're in the United States, Washington, D.C., having record cold, record snow, Seoul, Korea, Beijing, China. The last week it snowed all across Japan. Tremendous cold weather. But what does this mean? Now, another issue that has been going on, the lack of sunspots. Now, the solar minimum, the last time we've had these, the lack of sunspots, every time this has happened throughout history, there seems to be a number of years where we have cold weather, where we really don't have a summer. And so this is what I wonder if we're about. I'm not predicting this. We could snap out of it. But I'm wondering if we're headed into a summer where we would have basically no summer. Crop failures across the globe, especially the Northern Hemisphere, the majority of food that is provided to the world comes from the Northern Hemisphere. So if we are set into a deep freeze now and cannot pull out of this in time for a good crop season, there could be serious food shortages as we head into the middle of this year. And remember that a lot of the food is genetically altered food. This requires an annual growth cycle and seed production cycle. And if that cycle is broken, the world food supply will go under very quickly. Production lines and the from the development of the seed to the harvest. And what these companies rely on is good weather season after season. Genetically altered foods and grains do not do well if we have cold weather and if we have successively cold summers. The only reason seed and crops have come back in the past rapidly is because we were using non-genetically altered grain and seed sources for corn and other types of grain. So the question is, with genetically altered seed stock dominating the world food supply, would we be headed into a severe food shortage worldwide that could not be repaired because the food is grown from seed stock that is not reproducible? In other words, if you have an ear of corn somewhere from a hybrid corn stock, you cannot plant those seeds and have it grow again. So at any rate, the question is, with this extreme cold weather, are we headed into a summer where there will be severe crop failures? There's a whole collage of topics that I'm going to talk about tonight. And the very last one you're going to see is related to, in a sense, banking, a worldwide banking cartel, and we're all familiar with this now, running the world in a very distorted way. The militarism, the worldwide, the creation of wars, this type of thing, to keep that banking system running. They have a formula that has been working not only for hundreds of years, but thousands of years. Militarism, and that requires building up of resources, the use of resources put into militarism. Some people make a lot of money, and especially related to the government, and that's why these systems can stay in place when the banking operations run the government. And we'll see this over and over again. So when Obama says we need to use the best science and technology, for example, what he was referring to was body scanners. To put body scanners in all the airports so when you walk through, guess what? They can see right through you. They can see everything about you and your internal body structure. They can see the hair on your body. They can see everything. And this could then be placed into databases, government databases, an extreme intrusion on people's privacy, just to be transported from one place to another. And what has spawned this? What it looks like, a setup, once again, of a person who could get on an airplane without a passport, without any documentation, without any luggage and be just walked right through all of the security checkpoints when lines and lines and lines of regular people go through and are checked, have to take their shoes off, have their bags checked, and this guy walks through like he was Prince Charming and with a, accompanied by a person who speaks English and makes sure he gets on the airplane and in his seat and then is allegedly going to bomb an airplane. It's just such an amazing setup, but that is now being used to force the public, you the public, into going through much more security checkpoints. They're saying there will be further delays in travel, but all of this set up to restrict travel of the general public. Now, as I said, I did some traveling, and what amazed me is as you walk through airports around the globe, airports are filled with military personnel from all countries. There is no longer a difference between military and police. This is becoming common throughout countries, and it's all done to protect you, the public. So at any rate, I'm going to go right into the main science topic here. And I'm going to start it out with a rather unusual story. When you're in third world countries, you see some very disturbing things, let's put it that way. And for some people who've never been to a third world country, and I'm not talking about going to Cancun, Mexico, or a tourist resort, I'm talking about really going out into the country and seeing the people that actually live there. Have you, as a person, ever seen a homeless street person dig through a pile of garbage for supper? And that's a very disturbing question. But what I'm going to ask you after this is even more disturbing. After that person has thoroughly scoured the garbage pile and found something to eat, a second person comes along 20 minutes later and digs through the same garbage pile hoping to find something to eat, not realizing that the garbage pile had already been dug through by another person, and actually finds something for the second person to eat. And another 10 or 20 minutes later, another person comes along and digs through the same garbage pile. What is wrong with this picture? I'm going to also mention that this past week, Cuba announced that it had a program that has been in place for a long time and could verify that there was not a single child or person in Cuba that went hungry on any given day. This is not just for a day. This is on every day from there and there into the future. They had succeeded in providing medical attention for every person, for dental service for every person, food for every person, education for every person. And it's a very different type of society than what we typically have been told about socialism in this country, that it the amazing things that they're against religion or they're going to kill anybody that believes in God. All of these fairy tales that have been promoted by the Western press to make you think that Cuba is a terrible place and that terrible people live there. Cuba, and it's moving into Venezuela and many of the other southern South American countries, they're realizing, and Hugo Chavez said it very distinctly at the World Conference on Global Climate Control. He said the world cannot continue living under the banking system that is currently being forced on the public throughout the world. Now, what does this have to do with science? Well, ask the president of your country, Obama, because he said it best, that you have to use science and technology to control the public. That's what it has to do with science. It's a very controlling situation, and this is one of the big gripes I have with scientists and engineers who've sold their souls to companies for a salary, creating scientific inventions, and they have no control. Say the person who created the transistor. Couldn't that person have said, this transistor is for use for peaceful purposes only, for progress, to help the human race, but how many transistors have been used in military equipment or other types of equipment to kill people? That scientist failed because he produced a product, and it wasn't really his failure. It was the failure of the entire system that we live in. Scientists do not have control of the technology that they create, and that technology moves into the hands of people who are basically monsters. You could have a pencil on a table and use it for writing or to make a beautiful drawing, or you could use it to stab somebody and hurt them. It's not the creation that is the problem, it's the use of the item that is created, and the hands that those created items get into, and the use of these to suppress the public. So at any rate, I'm going to go through a number of topics here, and these will all be related to the final story I'm going to talk about on this show, dealing with banking, and ultimately the control of you, the public, using science and technology. Recently, 7 CIA agents were killed in a bombing where a double agent from Jordan, they were relying on this person for high-level intelligence gathering, and they went into a meeting. The person from Jordan was wearing a flak vest or a bulletproof vest, which was actually a bomb. He detonated it. And the point is that the CIA has repeatedly failed in intelligence gathering in the Mideast. The point is now the CIA has a problem. They don't know who to trust. Everybody that is on their so-called payroll and double agents are totally at risk of being just that, double agents, and providing them with false information. So basically, at this point, the CIA has been neutralized worldwide by that single event. Very interesting, because the CIA is the police force of the world banking system. Let me go back to airports, airport security. And I'm going to talk about what we all hate when we travel. We go through airport security checkpoints. 99.99% of us are just regular people. We go about our daily lives. We don't have any intention of terrorism. We don't have any history of terrorism. We are citizens of this country. Our families have been citizens of this country. And there's no history of terrorism. Yet a person who is his own father called Homeland Security and said, this person is in danger of bombing an airplane, this guy on Christmas Day. His own father had informed Homeland Security, and he got walked through and placed on an airplane with bombs on him. This whole thing is so suspect. And, of course, the end result is more security, more checkpoints at airports for you, the public. But let me explain something. Now, I've taught statistics at the university level. I know statistics very well. And statistics come into planning on many levels, especially if you're looking for a needle in a haystack. Let's put it this way. You have a haystack, and somewhere in that haystack, there is a needle. You can start out by pulling out straw by straw, grain of a piece of straw at a time, and you would eventually find that needle if you were meticulous in your work. That's similar to a person trying to go through putting all the people that go on airplanes through a checkpoint. Well, maybe you're going to find somebody, but in the history of all of this checkpoint analysis of everybody who goes on a plane, have they ever found anybody? There are more cases of people getting through there on the airplanes than there are people getting caught. But the point is, what if you had a haystack and there was a needle in there, but you had intelligence that you knew that the needle was in a certain area, and not only did you know it was there, you had a metal detector, and you could go in and pinpoint that needle without any disturbance of the rest of the haystack. Would you continue to look at all of the hay in the haystack? Of course not. it doesn't make any sense. Now let's look at some other examples of statistical sampling. That's what it's called, statistical sampling. Now, in Vietnam, a tremendous amount of bombing was done using bombs that would take out tremendous regions of foliation. And these were carpet bombs, basically, that would take out entire areas, killing, you know, a lot of civilians. Millions of civilians were killed in Vietnam. But the idea was that if you take out enough area, you might get the bad guy. There might be one of your bad guys down there that you might get, but in the process, you take out millions of innocent victims in the process. It was determined after Vietnam that that was not a good strategy. Let's look at World War II carpet bombing of enemy targets. World War II Germany bombs sometimes as many as 7,000 bombers in the air, cross-pattern bombing of German bomb targets. They found that that was ineffective. Of the number of bombs dropped, very few hit their target. So along in the Reagan era, prior to Gulf War I, there was a man in the military, and he said, if we develop some smart bombs using laser technology, we could have a single bomb hit a single designated target, and that single bomb would take the place of all of the thousands of bombs that you could bomb from great big bombers. So a single plane coming in with a single bomb, a single smart bomb, made a lot more sense, and it was more economical. Well, gee, I don't think people in warfare want things that are economical. But anyway, the smart bomb program was developed. And the point was that if you have a target, you go directly to that target. And this all comes back to the analysis of checkpoints at airports, security checkpoints. So if someone is checking everybody at the airport, where 99.9% of those people are obviously not terrorists, are obviously not going to bomb the plane, then you are wasting tremendous resources in screening everybody that gets on the airplane in hopes of finding the one guy that's going to bomb it. And of course, he's already gone another route to get onto the airplane. So obviously, it's not a plan that's working or that can work, but then again, you realize the point is not to find the guy that's dropping the bomb into the airplane, but to take the public and restrict their movement, to put a clamp on the public. So you realize that anybody that had half a brain would realize that the long lines, checkpoints at airports, is not to find a bomber. In fact, most of the bombers seem to be setups. So screening everybody simply does not make sense. I'm going to talk about another subject also related, that government positions, people in many government positions today are not being paid, simply because states like California, New York, and many other states are broke. So people are starting to go to work. They're starting to go to work and not get paid, and you can only imagine how long that's going to go on. I heard of one person talking yesterday that prisons, the people who run prisons, who maintain prisons, the staff, are not being paid, many of them with high-level prisoners. What are you going to do with these places when they stop paying the salaries, when they stop sending food? Are they going to open the door and let these people out into the public? So this is a big problem. That governments, and this is not just in the United States, or this is worldwide, that governments are becoming one of the main employers and they cannot pay their workers. Which brings us to a very striking point, that World War II, there's a very strange dichotomy here, that when the nurses and first troops went into what were called the death camps, the people were were obviously starving to death there. They had no food. And of course, this was due to the fact that all of the resources in Germany were being put out to the front lines to support the troops. And could we be heading into situations like that where there's simply not enough food and that food is being used for resources such as militarism? But the point is, I really don't like talking about those subjects because it becomes very touchy, but the point is the world seems to be headed towards a very similar situation that existed prior to World War II in Germany and other countries around the world. I've already talked about the citrus crop freezing in Florida and many other parts of the world where crops are, due to the cold weather, there's crop failures. Now I'm going to... I'm just looking at some of my final notes here. Okay, I am going to start talking about the main science topic, and you may have seen this in the press. Probably most of you have not. So this story actually started in November of 2008 and followed up through the present time. Yesterday, a man originally living in Panama was extradited from Colombia to the United States to New York to face charges of, I'll read those charges here in a minute, but basically money laundering and illicit businesses of for making money. And so I got wind of some very different, a very different story. So I went on an assignment, as I would call it, to investigate this story and find out what the real story was. And then to do that, I had to basically go on to the street and talk to the people in various countries and understand what was going on. This man's name is David Murcia Guzman. Originally living in Colombia, moved to Panama, and he started a very interesting business. And here's basically how it worked. I'll explain the business first, and then explain exactly what had happened over the past years. The business started out, he was basically a salesman prior to that, and he had an idea. It was basically an investment idea. And he's being targeted as a Ponzi scheme scammer. And so anyway, basically Ponzi scheme, for those of you who are not familiar with that, that's like the Madoff case where he conned people into investing into his investment firm, but he didn't invest the money. And he took the money that people put into the investment firm and paid them back a dividend from that, a healthy dividend, and then those people turned around and got other people to invest their money, and that's a Ponzi scheme. The entire issue of the Ponzi scheme is you don't invest the money, you simply pay people back with the money they already gave you, and if you keep building this up, it's called a pyramid scheme, as more and more people coming in on the bottom, you pay the people on the top. So you're paying the people back a dividend out of the money that's coming in, and it's a very profitable business until the entire thing collapses because you never invested the money. That's a Ponzi scheme. And so anyway, that's, you're seeing a lot of this in the U.S., a lot of these being discovered. But David Murcia Guzman had a very different business. And if you look in the United States or in the UK or the BBC, if you look at the Western press, so to speak, he's being accused of running a Ponzi scheme and bilking people out of their life savings. And this caused tremendous riots around South America recently. But at any rate, let's look at actually what he did. If you go to the Colombian government, his actual accusation there is running a bank without a license. Now, if you understand what really happened, here's how his business model worked as follows. He started out by taking his own money, which is completely legal in many of these countries, and loaning it out to friends and family members, etc. Okay, he charged a relatively high interest rate, and this could vary depending on how long the money was loaned for and other factors. But let's take, for example, let's say 30% interest. Now, this is a 30% fixed interest flat fee. In other words, if he loaned out $100 in whatever currency it was, then the person receiving the loan would then pay it back $130 in the designated amount of time. And many times these loans were short term, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. But it gave people, poor people, the chance to buy something to start a business. Now, you have to understand, in most of these countries, there are rich people and there are poor people. 5.05% of the people are rich and own 99% of the land and businesses, and another 99.5% of the people are dirt poor and work in all capacities underneath. They're basically slaves of the entire country. So what Murcia Guzman was doing was loaning money to the poor people, and so they could buy a business. And I have some examples here that I found with my travels, and some very specific examples. Peasants in the southern parts of some of these countries, which were previously dependent on drug trade as being part of the drug trade in processing drugs or whatever, now could start businesses, small farms where they produced food, they could eat the food and develop a life. So they were left basically without jobs because of the drug cartels basically would move from place to place. So these peasants were now, through the loans of Murcia Guzman, were able to buy tools and actually start to farm and develop small businesses. Another example, a woman purchased a sewing machine so she could do part work sewing clothes and for a factory, so she didn't have to walk 20 blocks through a crowded city to get to work and then walk home those 20 blocks at night after working for a long period of time. Staying in the house allowed her children a better life, and she could watch the children while other family members went out and pursued other work. So it buying the sewing machine allowed her work in her home and allowed them to actually make money where they were independent. Another woman purchased a hair dryer and a set of hair, I don't know all the terms for these, but what women use for straightening their hair and brushes, whereas she before had a very unreliable hair dryer that didn't work. And so now, with a loan from Murcia Guzman, she could buy a decent set of hair processing tools, and women, she could either go to their house or they could come to her house, and she could make money at a small business and support her family. Another woman bought a small, it was like a little kind of a case that you carry around for doing nails, for painting the nails of women. And some men could buy tools so they could do car repair. These are people who want to work hard but have no resources. And by the way, they could not get loans. None of these people could get loans from the bank. Now, let's compare. You might say, well, 30% for 2 or 3 months, that's a lot of interest. But let's compare it to what the regular bank would do if they would loan it to these poor people. The bank has a system where you go in and they say, okay, the bank says we'll loan you this amount of money at 7% interest rate. But that's really not true, because as soon as you start paying the loan back, your first month payment is amortized. In other words, you're paying 98% interest the first month, you're paying 95% interest the second month, you're paying 94% interest the third month, and on and on. So when you go to a bank and they say 7% interest, it's the biggest lie on the planet. You're paying 98% up front. So the Guzman loan at 30% was a steal compared to what the banks were giving. And of course, the bank would not even think of giving a loan to a peasant or a poor person. Now, let's carry this a bit further. What happened is Murcia Guzman became so successful that people began to invest in his business. He developed a business called DMG. And they had offices all over many of these Latin American countries. People would come in and deposit their money in there, and they would get a 30 or a 40 or a 50% return on a very short-term notice. So if someone had $50, they had an extra money. A woman had saved up some money, or a man at his job, or he maybe sold some crops. He could take that money into DMG and invest it, and within a couple of months get a 50 or 80% payback on the investment. This was not a Ponzi scheme. Now, I want to relate this back to the beginning of the 1900s in the United States, when the industrialization of the United States was taking place. Very similar situation, and the industrialists at that time in the United States were making so much money through smart investments because there was labor available, people wanted to work hard, new inventions were coming online, electricity was available, all of these things happening, and private investment was rampant, and guess what? Nobody was going to the bank. The banks were empty. Nobody was putting their money there because the individual investors and entrepreneurs had a system where an entrepreneur would make a lot of money. Well, what was he going to do with it? He would loan it out to poor people. People wanted to work hard, and they did. They developed businesses, all kinds of businesses. And the bank sat by and watched, and they said, we got to stop this. We can't have these people loaning money and not coming to us. So they developed a national banking system that required you to belong to their club. And in the now, there are other factors involved here, but basically the banks got together and with the government, and they formed something called the Federal Reserve. And you had to be a member of this club to have a bank, to have a bank charter. So the government then put the clamps on individuals loaning money. They said this was incorrect. You couldn't do it. So let's look at the two factors here. First of all, poor people who wanted to work hard could not get money to have their own business. They had to work for the man. And this was with bank investment. Number two, the banks had to belong to a certain system, or they were by decree made illegal. Now, a lot of these Latin American countries don't have such laws, so it was totally legal for a person like David Murcia Guzman to start this business. Within a couple short years, he amassed $2.6 billion, and people were putting their money into his bank, not the regular banking system. Do you see the problem here? He was succeeding, and the people were developing, and the banks were out of the loop. Gee, where's the problem? Well, at any rate, so recently there were riots in many of these countries, massive riots, people filling the streets, and the Western press claimed that the people were rioting against David Murcia Guzman. But when you talk to the people on the street, they will tell you very specifically they were rioting against the government, which came in and by the banks, the banking system, which of course is under the guise, the same Federal Reserve that runs the United States banking system, runs the banks in all of these small countries, and they did not like to see someone with fantastic success. And so now the U.S. DEA comes in and accuses him of money laundering for drug cartels. Isn't that interesting? The only problem is that the drug problem has moved now into Mexico. Many of the old traditional, what we think of as the drug trafficking countries of South America, have been pretty much cleaned up and have turned to tourism. But it's very interesting to see that they're trying to accuse this guy of money laundering for drugs. And of course, we all want to see the drug problem go away. And these are all trumped up charges. So he's being extradited actually as of yesterday, January 5th, I believe. He was being extradited to the United States, to New York, to face federal racketeering charges in the United States. At any rate, why am I talking about this on a science show? Because it's very important to understand the cycle of science, technology, banking, using that science and technology to control the public through warfare, through militarism, and they do not want the small guy to succeed, if you understand what I mean. The amazing part of this is the inability of the small person to get money to work. They're forced in many of these countries to work under extremely harsh conditions, very long hours, and you'll find that the unemployment rates in many of these countries is as much as 50%. Now, I want to read an article that came out of the Latin American Herald Tribune, and it says the following. Murcia said in November, this is this past November, that when he was convicted in Colombia, that he planned to plead not guilty to his arraignment in New York. And he said, "I won't plead guilty to the U.S. counts," he said, "denying any involvement with money laundering. It was not a money laundering scheme." And so, at any rate, I want to read the actual charge here. And this is the way it is stated in the Latin American news media as opposed to the U.S. news media. I want to read this. It says that last month, Colombian court sentenced a 30-year-old Murcia to 30 years in prison for running an unlicensed bank. I want to repeat that. He was running an unlicensed bank. That's very important because the people were in droves, in flocks, going to his bank, DMG, and depositing their money and getting back a very big return. Now, how could they get back a big return on their money? Let's do the math and show you that this is not a Ponzi scheme. Okay, let's do the math. Someone comes into the DMG and deposits $100. Remember that the banks were doing fractional reserve banking. They would loan out 10 or 100 times the amount of money that they had. Murcia Guzman was not using the system of fractional reserve banking. He was actually loaning out the money that people put into his bank. He did not use fractional reserve banking. He only loaned out what was put into his bank. Okay, so let's imagine that some poor person down there put in the equivalent of $100 and they were going to get back, let's say, 50% on that within a 4-month period. The $100 then was loaned out to some poor person who wanted to start a business. That person took the money, actually was industrious enough to pay back the 30% interest within 1 month. Okay, now you have 30% interest on that $100 back into DMG, plus you have a person that's self-employed, has equipment, can be self-employed, a woman with a sewing machine, a woman with a hair dryer, with a hair process or hair styling equipment. You have a guy with some tools that he can do farming with. Okay, and that with that industrial effort, that person pays back the 30% within the 1 month plus the $100. DMG has now made 30% on that $100. Okay, month two comes along, that same $100 goes out, is invested in some other person who has no job and they want to work hard. They buy the equipment they need. Maybe they're fixing automobiles or changing tires, whatever they're doing. and within a month they pay back the 30%. And these are people that are very thankful. Why are they paying that 30% back? Because they're very thankful that someone could give them something to get them started and put on their own 2 feet. This is amazing when you actually see it happen, and these people go out and work hard because it's the only game in town, and they've been unemployed and they have no food for their family, and now they can work. They can work and provide for their family. Okay, so the second month, the next 30% comes in. Now there's 60% in 2 months on that $100. Okay, now the person who invested that first $100 into DMG already has their 50% within 2 months, and there's 10% left over as profit for DMG, the David Murcia Guzman Company. So you can see how this works in a very poor country where people have no place to go for employment, but they want to work hard, where they will do anything. They have a skill, but they can't deploy that skill. And the only way they can deploy that skill is to go work for someone who's going to pay them dirt wages, and they're going to be stuck there for the rest of their life like a slave. Then the other option is to go to DMG, get a loan, get on their own 2 feet, and work on a job, and you better believe those people work hard. So this is what's going on. The system was so successful. People were investing. Some people put their entire life savings in there, and they were getting money back. And I've seen this from my own perspective with my own two eyes. And then around November of 2008, the government at the bequest of the bankers came in and shut his business down and took all his resources, personal and the business resources. The government gave the police forces in any town and the banks legal authority to go into anybody's bank account that they thought had profited by this business and take their money. That's what happened. That's when the people took to the streets. And it was not a protest against David Murcia Guzman. It was a protest against the government and the banking system. Now this, as I said, stretched from Panama to Venezuela to Colombia to Peru through South America, but apparently it was most successful in the country of Colombia, where they prosecuted David Murcia Guzman, sentenced him to 30 years in prison, an extremely unrealistic sentence for someone. Now you have to imagine that these countries are extremely corrupt. There are people in government, there are people in all kinds of businesses doing all kinds of corrupt things, taking government bribes and kickbacks. It's just rampant. So to take and single out a single person like this, who was wildly successful, what was his crime against humanity? His crime, as I stated, you won't see this at the BBC, you won't see this in the New York Times, you won't see this in any Western press. If you look into the Latin American papers, his crime was running an unlicensed bank. The people were flocking to his bank because he had a system that worked. It worked with the poor people, it gave the poor people something to build on, and they shut it down and now are running him up to the United States to convict him. They want to make a symbol of this person to show that you better not start your own banking system. Okay, so where does that leave the rest of the world? This was an aberration. In the United States, this could never happen because the laws preventing this were put in place long ago, long, long ago, in 1904, 1905, when the Federal Reserve was being built, when it was being pushed through Congress, when it was being pushed through onto this country. And by the way, that was the precursor to all of the world wars that have been going on ever since. World War One was the first. There's a wonderful little story of J.P. Morgan, one of the masters of the Federal Reserve banking system. In fact, the name Reserve came from J.P. Morgan. The Minnesota, right here where I happen to reside, had a pair of brothers. They went up into the middle of the wilderness in central northern Minnesota and discovered the biggest iron reserve in the world. It was basically just running for about 150 miles on the surface, and with magnetic equipment they could tell that this was a vast iron reserve in the ground. It was a vast vein of iron that had come from volcanic activity apparently early in the Earth's history. But there were three veins of iron ore, the biggest being named after these two brothers called the Mesabi brothers. They developed, so they started to mine the area, digging out iron ore, but they had a little problem. They needed to get that ore to Lake Superior, about 100 miles away, so that it could be taken by ship down to Cleveland, where it would then be processed into steel. Well, a wonderful guy named J.P. Morgan came along and, just was going to help him out. And so he built the Reserve Railroad that went, and of course, the Federal Reserve, you will find in all of these ventures that came out of that era, with energy, with the iron ore industry, with the Federal Reserve banking system, which is an independent banking system but controls the banks of the United States and controls and prevents private banks from existing, by the way. But anyway, good old JP told them he would invest in the railroad to get their iron over to Lake Superior. So the Mesabi brothers invested all of the money, got the workers in there, dug out the iron ore, and it was all ready to go. And J.P. Morgan came in and shut down the railroad, basically, and sat there until they were ready to starve to death, and said, I'll help you out, but I'm going to buy out your operation, pennies on the dollar. And that's why northern Minnesota has a thing called reserve mining. So basically, the bankers were able to go in, take out the hard work and resources of independent hard workers. Once again, the Mesabi brothers, whose name now resides on that piece of outcropping up there. But basically, the bankers came in and took over their business and, for all practical purposes, stole it from them. Stole their livelihood. And that is what is happening around the world. And so when you see this guy, David Murcia Guzman, go up to court in New York, being put up on trumped-up charges for drug laundering, drug money laundering, and other illicit... Let me read the charge here. I want to actually read this charge. Let me see if I can find it. Illicit money, basically. In other words, he was making money outside the system, something they simply do not want to see. But basically, they're putting him up on false charges so they can make an image of this person so no one ever has the idea of it creating a banking system that would compete with the world banking system and allow private individuals, small individuals, to succeed. So what does this have to do with science? Well, let's go back to Obama's statement yesterday when he made his international speech regarding science. He said that science and technology had to be used. And this was one of the very first things out of his mouth when he made his statement. I saw it on international TV, and my mouth just dropped because it was nearly the first thing out of his mouth. And he was adamant that he was going to get to the bottom of this. How could a person with bombs and on the known terrorist list, on the no-fly list, that he should have been on the no-fly list, and there was ample intelligence information on this person, how could he possibly get on a flight? He didn't have a passport. He had no luggage. They didn't check him at the security checkpoints. He was walked through security and placed on a plane. How could this possibly happen? But the end result is that science and technology has to be used for scanning of the public. There would be more delays in air traffic control. The end result was that the public had to pay for this security failure, and it really wasn't a security failure. So once again, you see the entire goal is to control the movement of the populace. And so you start to see the clamps coming down on the public. And one of the main methods, one of the main tools used to control the public is science and technology. And that's why Obama said that. He was adamant that science and technology, so to all my science friends out there who work for the government, who work for think tanks, who work for government agencies, all of your work goes to this system that is out of control, and you don't have control of the developed products, the technologies that are developed. None of this, you don't have any control over this. That's why I refuse to work for any of these systems. I don't want to have anything to do with them. I don't want any government funding. Private development is the only way that's working. Let's take another great example. Bert Rutan and the Richard Branson developing many new technologies for going into space, for suborbital flight, for short-term travel around the world. This all being developed by private enterprise, private funding. It's another great example of technology being developed by private people, not for warfare, but to advance the human race. It's just amazing to see what can happen with private development, but it is not looked upon fondly by the bankers because they don't control it. There has been a huge amount of effort to put the Federal Aviation Administration in front of any private air development that could go into outer space, a tremendous amount of red tape that they're putting in front of any private development. The whole purpose of this is to control the movement of the public. Space is considered to be, outer space that is considered to be the private playground of the rich and famous, the bankers who control the military. NASA is now under the military. And so, as I've said many times, NASA is nothing more than a smokescreen for the real space program that goes on in the background. At any rate, these are very complex topics, and they really reach into the world of science. But the bankers know very well, and the people that work for those bankers, like Obama, they know very well that science and technology are the tools that have to be used to control the public, to keep the public at bay. And a guy like Murcia Guzman is an aberration. He's a person that cannot be allowed. And that's why, by the way, I thought it was very interesting. They paraded him in front of cameras for about an hour. Now, if they really just wanted to extradite this guy to the United States, that would be one thing. But they spent 20 minutes parading him with armed guards on each side with a bulletproof vest on him so that it would be a big show. And they stopped him in front of cameras for photo ops. That was to show that the person trying to create a private banking system would not be allowed. At any rate, join me next week as I continue on the search for science and related to how this affects your lives. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.